Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Becoming by Jessica Meggs, narrated by Shayna Somerville. Prologue. Atlanta, Georgia. Brant Evans' scuffed black combat boots struck the pavement as he ran down the rain-dampened street, his heart hammering wildly against his ribs like it was trying to beat free from his chest. His breathing was loud and harsh. His hands sweated and shook uncontrollably. His whole body was on edge. He'd been running for over half an hour. Brant ducked into an alley without slowing his pace and dropped down beside a smelly, overflowing green dumpster to hide. Leaning against the cool brick wall, he felt the solidness of it, the rough stone scraping against his back through his thin t-shirt. He closed his eyes and struggled to breathe. His lungs burned. His eyes hurt. He was a rabbit trying to outrun a fox. Hunted. Desperate. He just needed a moment to rest. Just one moment. He could spare a moment, couldn't he? Brant leaned forward and peered at the alley's opening, taking in a deep breath of the sharp, cold January air and rubbing his hands over each of his arms in turn to ward off the chill. He desperately wished he had a jacket as he hunched over and shivered. He held his breath until his chest ached, and then he slowly released it. It clouded the air before his face. He thought he might have lost them, but he didn't want to take any chances. There was no way to know how many had followed him, how many had caught his scent. He had to assume it wasn't just one or two. He had to assume he was being pursued, always pursued. If he let his guard down. Brant wiped his sweating palms down the thighs of his camouflage pants and leaned back against the wall again. He knew what would happen if he were caught. He'd seen too many people, his sister included, succumb to the plague. He knew if he were caught, it would all end in blood and pain and death. It wasn't the end he'd envisioned for himself, and he refused to let it turn out that way. He had to get out of the city as soon as he could, if he expected to survive. He had to run. He had to get ahead of the infection, flee, and find a safe place to hide. A faint noise echoed from the alleyway's entrance. Brant's heart jumped into his throat and choked him. He peered around the edge of the dumpster again, and his hand wandered to the Beretta M9 pistol at his hip. He drew it and ejected the magazine to look inside. It was empty, as expected. He pulled back the slide. He already knew what he'd find. A single bullet. The one he'd carefully counted ammunition to save, just in case. But he was nothing if not a survivor, even if his survival had been forced out of him on a promise he hadn't wanted to make. He snapped the magazine back into the pistol as quietly as he could. The sound was too loud to his ears, and he worried that the simple action would draw unwanted attention to him. As if on cue, a shuffling noise came from the other side of the dumpster. A quiet snarl and an odd snuffling sound followed it. Brant closed his eyes and instinctively pressed back more firmly against the brick. He became the rabbit again, shrinking back among the loose trash that skittered about in the stiff, cold wind. He hoped against hope he wouldn't be sniffed out. Another jolt of adrenaline pumped into Brant's veins as an ominous chill ran down his spine and raised the hair on the back of his neck. His instincts whispered that there wasn't going to be an escape from this one. He wasn't sure how much more of this he could take. The idea of being chased, of being caught, was slowly driving him insane. He had to do something, anything, to alleviate the awful sensation. Brant took a deep, steadying breath and stood abruptly. His head swam at the sudden movement. His vision dimmed and the alleyway spun around him. His heart lurched in his chest. Shaking his head, he caught his hand against the dumpster to steady himself and lifted the pistol. The weapon felt incredibly heavy, and the barrel trembled. He swallowed and curled his finger to depress the trigger. Time slowed to a crawl. The last bullet left the pistol with a bang. The projectile whipped past the blood-covered man who ran down the alleyway toward him. It embedded into the wall with a splatter of brick. Shards of red stone sprayed the man and cut into his cheek. He was unaffected as he continued his mindless pursuit. Brant stumbled back, and the emptied Beretta fell from his limp hand to the pavement. He looked left and right frantically, thoughts blazing through his mind in a flurry, faster than he could catch them. His shot had missed? How had it missed when the target was so close? He was an expert marksman, for Christ's sake. He wasn't supposed to miss. Brant swore under his breath and mentally inventoried the weapons left on his person. There hadn't been much to begin with. Just the sidearm that now lay expended on the pavement and a rifle he'd abandoned once he had run out of ammunition for it, the extra weight of the spent weapon having been a hindrance. He took a couple of steps back and remembered the one weapon he had left. Brant knelt and pulled his K-bar knife free from the sheath strapped to the outside of his right boot. It wasn't much, and he wasn't sure how much damage the 7-inch blade could actually cause to one of these attackers, but it was all he had left. He stood just in time. The man launched himself at Brant, hands extended, animalistic hatred in his red-rimmed, bloodshot eyes. Instinct guided him as he lifted the knife sharply upward and stood from his kneeling position. In one smooth move, Brant slammed the knife's blade into the fleshy underside of the man's lower jaw. To Brant's dismay, the man's gnarled hands closed in tight fists in his shirt, and he shook his head violently to free the knife from his jaw. Trapped, Brant struggled to pull himself from the man's grip, but the man was stronger than he looked. So he did the only thing he could. He wrenched the knife from the man's jaw and slammed it into his left temple. As the blade struck home, the man's forward momentum carried him a few more steps. He leaned heavily against Brant, then fell to the pavement in a heap. Brant backed away from the body, shuddering as nausea welled up in his throat. He shook it off and took his first real look at the man who'd attacked him. He wasn't anyone Brant recognized, which was the best news he'd get all day. This man was too old to have been a current member of the military. He was around 70, thin and bony and wrinkled with age, hair white and sparse on his head. He was clad in dirtied sweatpants and a blood-stained white bathrobe, his feet bare and torn from running without shoes on the cold, unforgiving streets and sidewalks of Atlanta. The elderly man was definitely a civilian, possibly from one of the local nursing homes. Judging by the crusted blood under his lengthening, yellowed fingernails, the man had been ill for at least 4 days. Brant grasped the hilt of his knife and pulled it free from the man's temple. It slid away from the bone and flesh with an indescribable sound that made him shudder in disgust. He took a moment to wipe the blood from the blade onto the edge of the dead man's bathrobe. He had no desire to continue his exam of the body. He looked instead to the Beretta lying on the wet pavement. The weapon was empty and wouldn't do him any further good. The chances he'd find much suitable ammunition for it in a city under siege were slim, and searching for it wasn't worth his time. The general populace had days before raided the gun shops and sports stores in the city for anything usable that had been left behind by the military, and all of the ammunition shelves were likely bare. Nevertheless, he scooped the gun up and jammed it into the holster on his belt. Brant looked around the darkening alley. Night had begun to fall, the dusk settling over the alley and making it difficult to see. He tried to center his mind and figure out where to go, what to do. He couldn't stay on the streets in the dark. It increased his chances of being killed tenfold. The city still crumbled around him, so he needed to move fast. His options were severely limited. He turned in a slow circle and spotted a red ladder hanging at the end of the alley, almost invisible in the dark. A fire escape, he realized. It at least offered an alternative to returning to the street. He glanced over his shoulder to make sure nothing else was coming in his direction, then returned the knife to its sheath and jumped up. He caught the bottom rung of the ladder and hauled himself onto it, his biceps bulging as he dragged himself up. He began climbing as quickly as he dared. The metal rungs were slick with rain and ice, and they bit into Brant's palms and fingers as he trekked up the ladder. His boots slipped on the icy rungs more than once and sent his heart faltering in his chest. It was only through his own reflexes that he didn't fall from the ladder into the pavement below. The thought of breaking bones and leaving himself helpless was enough to keep him on his guard. There'd be no survival for him if he ended up with a broken leg in a dirty alley in downtown Atlanta. In that situation, he could just slap a sign on himself that said dinner and lie back to wait for the end. Brant reached the roof easily enough and gained his footing on the flat, graveled surface. From there, he took a few moments to look out across the city and plan his next step. Smoke billowed on the horizon, close to the edge of the downtown metro area. A tornado siren blasted its monotonous refrain from somewhere in the city, warning Atlanta residents to get to a safe place. Gunfire rang out too close to his position for comfort. Screams echoed faintly through the streets nearby, but he didn't dare check out the source. An ambulance siren played its part in the symphony of a city falling in on itself. Brant dropped to his knees, suddenly overwhelmed by all the trauma he'd experienced that day. He ignored the gravel digging into his skin through his pants and covered his mouth as he fought off the bile that rose in his throat. The horror he'd faced throbbed in his brain even as he closed his eyes. The things he'd seen and experienced that day were worse than anything he'd ever dreamed of. It was all he could do to remain upright as he fought to choke back the sickness in his mouth and soul. He couldn't hold it back, though, and he hunched over the gravel and vomited. His throat burned and his eyes watered as he gripped the edge of the building and dug his fingers into the stone. His chest heaved as he coughed up the remains of his last sparse meal. He rocked back on his heels, wiping at his mouth with the back of his hand, and cleared his throat. The taste in his mouth was awful, but it was the last thing on his mind. He felt at his face, testing his own temperature as best he could. He couldn't tell if he was running a fever, or if it was just heat generated by his climb up the fire escape ladder. He was sure he'd be feeling the symptoms by now if... Brant shook his head, clearing his throat once more as he took in the view. "A virus did all this," he whispered hoarsely. He looked upon the city once more. The city in which he'd grown up. The city he'd loved more than any other city he'd seen in his time in the military. It was like nothing Brant had ever witnessed before. It was the beginning of the end of civilization, and the thought terrified him. How can this even be possible? Dr. Derek Rivers was wrong. He had to be wrong. The man who'd freed him and given him the chance to get this far was long dead, one of the early victims of the viral outbreak that, even now, swept over Atlanta and beyond with a speed to rival the Black Death itself. Brant had thought that Derek had exaggerated when he'd told him what was going on in the outside world. But he hadn't exaggerated. Indeed, he hadn't gone far enough in his description of the total devastation that the virus had visited upon the city. "Which way? Which way?" he whispered. He forced himself to his feet once more. It wasn't time to be puking on a roof and reminiscing about men who were likely dead. He slowly surveyed the rooftop, searching for an escape route and a plan. He looked in every direction, uncertain which way would be safest. None of them, really. Safety was a foreign concept to Atlanta now. Before Brant went anywhere, though, he needed weapons. He needed food. He needed water. And he needed a safe place to hide for the night. Chapter 1. Plantersville, Mississippi. 3 days later. Gray Carter leaned halfway under the hood of an older model Honda Civic, up to his elbows in grease and a grimace of concentration on his face, when a hand clapped against his back. Startled, he narrowly avoided striking his head on the underside of the hood before straightening and turning his grimace onto whoever had snuck up on him. His 25-year-old brother Theo stood beside him, attired in his immaculate paramedic uniform, his blonde hair neatly combed and his blue eyes dancing with merriment. He held a takeout drink tray and a bag of what smelled like something fatty and greasy in one hand, and a wicked grin crossed his face. I didn't scare you, did I? Oh, shut up, asshole, Gray replied, though he couldn't stop a grin from spreading across his own face. He tugged the well-used rag from the back pocket of his coveralls and scrubbed at the filth that had accumulated on his hands. Engine grease had worked its way under his nails and into the creases of his skin, and he had no hope of getting it all out without liberal amounts of dish soap. What are you doing here? He asked, stuffing the rag back in his pocket. I thought you had to work today. I'll go in later this evening, Theo replied. I'm just covering for Justin while he's in class. I figured I'd grab us some lunch and drop in to see how you're doing. He looked past Gray at the vehicle and asked, What's wrong with this one? Fubard alternator, he said. He nodded towards the white door that led from the service bays to the garage's administrative offices. There's a sink in the break room. I can wash up in there. Gray led the way through the noisy garage, trying to tune out the sounds of the other mechanics banging around under the hoods of cars and calling out to each other. Somewhere, music blasted on the radio. R&B that drove Gray crazy day in and day out. But he wasn't allowed to listen to music on headphones while servicing a customer's car. So he had to endure the torture. As he pushed the doors open to enter the building, the music cut out and an announcer broke in. We interrupt your regular programming to bring you a breaking news announcement. The door swung shut behind him and Theo, and Gray didn't hear what was said. It was probably nothing important anyway. Half of the news cycles were full of breaking news lately, and the vast majority of notices were inconsequential. After an intense scrubbing session with dish detergent and a rag, Gray sat down in the folding metal chair across from his brother to the feast of cheap cheeseburgers and greasy fries that Theo had unpacked from the sack. You did get mine with no pickles, right? Gray asked. Theo blew the paper wrapper off his straw, shooting it across the table at him, and Gray swatted it out of the air. What do you think I am? Theo asked. Some kind of an idiot? Well, Gray drew out the word and laughed when Theo gave him a mock offended look. I'm kidding, okay? I know you got it without pickles. You never don't get it without pickles. I don't understand your aversion to pickles, Theo said. He unwrapped his burger and took a messy bite, adding with his mouth full of meat and bread, They're awesome. Gray wrinkled his nose but didn't reply. He bowed his head and recited the brief prayer of thanks he always made before eating. When he finished, he lifted his head to see Theo nibbling at a fry, smiling patiently. He returned the smile and dug into his cheeseburger. You still do that prayer thing before you eat? Theo asked once they'd both settled into the groove of their meals. Gray shrugged and finished his mouthful of burger before responding. Yeah, of course, he said. Why? Don't you? Theo dabbed a fry in some ketchup. Occasionally, whenever I think about it, which isn't often. He took a bite of burger and reclined in his chair. Hey, I have tomorrow off. After I get some sleep, do you want to go out in the town, do whatever? Yeah, sure. Sounds like fun. Gray agreed. We can go bar hopping or something. Maybe pick up a couple of chicks, huh? Theo snorted. You're the most unconvincing womanizer ever, he joked. You're too baby-faced for one-night stands. Gray threw a fry at him. Oh, come on. I'm not any more baby-faced than you are. He bit his tongue to keep from bringing up suspicions he'd been harboring about his brother's sexuality. Suspicions that Theo always seemed to go out of his way to deflect. Yeah, you keep telling yourself that. The twinkle of mischievousness in Theo's eyes showed that he was joking, but it still rankled Gray's nerves nonetheless. Before he could come up with a good retort, though, Theo said, Oh, I almost forgot. He leaned back in his chair, dug into the pocket by his right knee, and tossed a box at him. "I got your prescription refilled for you earlier." Gray caught the box and glanced at the label, then stuffed it into his pocket. "Thanks. I hadn't even thought about it." "See? This is why I still hang around you," Theo said, waving a fry in his direction. "If I decide to, I don't know, stop coming by to see you, you'd forget to get your meds refilled and would end up suffocating to death." Gray made a face at him and stuffed the last of his cheeseburger into his mouth. "You've got to give me a little credit." "Why would I want to do that?" Theo laughed. "It takes all the fun out of screwing with you." Gray sighed. "Don't you have somewhere to be? Like maybe work, saving people's lives instead of sitting here making mine miserable?" "I should be offended, but I don't think it's worth the energy." "Not after last night," Theo said with a chuckle, grimacing. The disparity between the expression on his face and the sound he made was disconcerting. At his questioning look, Theo explained, "Had a work car accident. There was a kid involved. Those are always hard." Gray frowned and leaned over the table, resting his elbows on the edge and studying Theo. "You okay?" "Hey, it's what I signed up for, isn't it? I wouldn't have made it through paramedic training if I couldn't handle it." He took a sip of soda. "It just gets rough when kids are hurt. Emotions and all that shit try to get in the way." "I could never do what you do," Gray said. He started cleaning up their trash, shoving the empty wrappers back in the bag. "I'd be entirely too nervous with other people's lives in my hands." Theo stood to help him wipe down the table. "It keeps roofs over our heads, so I do what I have to do." "Yeah, I know, and I thank you for that," Gray said. "God knows I don't pull in enough here to do much other than keep me in groceries and maybe pay my cell phone bill." "How's the apartment working out for you?" Theo asked. "Is everything still okay there?" "Yeah, it's fine," Gray assured him with a sheepish smile. "I don't know. It's okay, it's just not home, you know?" "I know," Theo sighed. "I'm sorry about all this. I've been arguing the case with Dr. Taylor every time I see him, but he's not budging. I don't know what to do next." Gray glanced at the clock above the door. The second hand ticked inexorably toward the 12. He sighed and headed for the trash can, jamming the bag into it. "As stimulating as this depressing conversation is, I have to get back to work. I've still got 3 hours to finish this car and get chewed out by the boss for only getting 2 cars done today." "Yeah, I've got to get to work myself soon," Theo said. Gray headed out the door and back into the service bays, his brother right behind him. Before he went to his car, Theo stopped him. "Hey, be careful going home this evening, okay? Seems like we've been working a lot of wrecks over the past couple of days, and there are rumors of some scary shit going on over in Georgia and Alabama. I don't want to have to come scrape you off the highway." Gray smiled tightly. While he was touched that Theo was concerned enough to say something, his brother's overprotectiveness had become almost stifling over the past few months. "Maybe I'm just getting used to staying by myself," he thought. He wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not. "I'll be fine, Theo," he promised. "It's not like I drive like a bat out of hell. Besides, I take that route home 5 days a week. It's nothing new." I know," Theo said. "Can't blame you for tossing that out there anyway, right?" He patted Gray on the back. "See you later, man." He started to walk toward his car, but didn't make it more than a few steps before turning and adding, "Oh, boss man at the base said he'd really appreciate it if you could come by when you had time to take a look at one of the ambulances. He thinks it's a fuel injector issue again." Gray waved a hand at him dismissively. "Tell Doug I'll see what I can do. I'll give him a call in the morning to make arrangements." He shook his head. "I don't know why I let myself get roped into constantly fixing those junkers for you guys." "Because you're just that damn good, Gray," Theo said. "And admit it. You're a total sucker for a big engine." He retreated to his car, slid in, and shut the door. Gray was still laughing when his brother pulled out of the lot. New Orleans, Louisiana. Your parents are so going to kill you. Remy Angelette wrinkled her nose and scoffed at the girl in the driver's seat, turning her arm around to study the design that had been newly inked onto her left bicep. The skin was still tender and sore from the experience of having dozens of needles rapidly jabbed into it. But in her opinion, the pain had been well worth it. It wasn't her first tattoo. Not by far. And by now, her mother should have expected this sort of thing from her. She wasn't particularly worried about either her mother's or her stepfather's reactions to the newest edition of art on her body. "Mom will be fine with it," she assured Casey. "She's pretty open-minded about stuff like this. And Jason isn't my father, so I don't really care what he thinks." "Yeah, but what would your real dad think?" Remy glanced at the new tattooed dragon on her arm again and looked at Casey with a smile. "I can imagine he'd definitely approve. Did you forget he had, like, 18 tattoos himself?" "No, I hadn't forgotten," Casey said. "Your dad was only the coolest person in existence." She reached to turn the radio's volume up a notch when a rock song came on, piped in via Bluetooth from the iPhone in the console between the two black leather seats. Remy scooped up the phone to see who the song was by, and found it wasn't anyone she'd ever heard of. It was rather catchy, though, and she bobbed her head with the music, subconsciously tapping her foot on the floorboard. "So, what are your plans for today?" she asked, raising her voice to be heard over the thumping beat from the stereo. "I have a paper to write," Casey said with a motion of her hand to the messenger bag by Remy's feet. "Elizabeth Browning." "Could be worse," Remy said thoughtfully. "Her love poems were pretty awesome." "Yeah, definitely could be worse." Remy shifted against the leather seat again, trying to make herself comfortable, and realized her bare shoulder had stuck to the leather in the warmth of the car. She didn't want to imagine what the seat was doing to her bare thighs. She leaned forward slightly to unstick her shoulder from the seat, and pulled her dark hair back with one hand, holding it off her neck in a makeshift ponytail. "I've been thinking of maybe going to college," Remy piped up. "Maybe majoring in something to do with music?"
"Remy, with the way you get tattoos and buy guitars and stuff, you'd never be able to afford it,"
Casey pointed out matter-of-factly.
"I know.
It'd be nice, though." Remy let go of her hair and tucked the locks behind her ears, careful to avoid the still-healing ring that pierced the cartilage of her left ear. "It'd give me something to do besides stare at a computer screen and surf the internet all day."
"I thought you liked surfing the internet all day," Casey teased.
"I do. But Facebook only stays entertaining for so long. And Twitter is just starting to get old," Remy complained. "I need something new to happen in my life. I need all this monotony broken, you know?"
"We should go out and do something spontaneous," Casey suggested. "Maybe take a road trip or something. What do you think?"
Remy shrugged half-heartedly and grabbed her water bottle from the pocket in the door. She took a sip and thought it over.
"I don't know. Maybe," she said. "I don't know if I'd have the money for something like that."
"Maybe you could get a new job," Casey said. She steered the Mustang off the paved highway and onto a dirt road winding back into the trees.
"Yeah, and maybe I could get a lobotomy too," she said, taking another sip from her bottle.
"I heard Mr. Carter, you know, the swim coach from the high school, I heard he's looking for someone to help lifeguard at the pool this spring." Remy pushed her hair back from her face again.
"I don't know. I'll think about it, okay?" she conceded. "Mr. Carter is a douche, though, so I doubt I'll even consider working for him."
"Well, just work for somebody," Casey pressed. "Then you can buy your own car and quit bumming rides off of me all the time."
"But Casey, your Mustang is just so nice," Remy said as the car bumped to a stop outside her house.
"Dodson," the mailbox read. She glanced at it and rolled her eyes before unlocking the passenger door and sliding to the edge of the seat.
"I'll see you later, chick. FaceTime me after dinner when you get the chance."
"Will do," Casey said cheerfully. She waved her fingers at Remy, and Remy returned the gesture and walked toward the house. Casey pulled away as Remy reached the bottom of the porch steps, which she was silently thankful for.
It didn't matter how many times Casey had been there. Remy was still embarrassed to have her friends see her house. When she climbed...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?